The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Kurt Heisler. He's the Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, the Administration on Children, Youth, and Families at HHS. Good afternoon, Kurt. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. It's great to be here.
You know, my listeners know I go to events all the time, and I'm usually a fly in the wall in the back of the room, and I say, oh, there's a bad speaker, there's a bad speaker, there's a bad speaker, and I fall asleep, you know, in the back of the room all the time. I was at an event a few months ago, and I saw Kurt give this presentation, and the people were just knocked off their chairs. I mean, he really dazzled them, and I tell you, you know, if you need a speaker, you should get this guy by hook or by crook. He talks about so many different topics, including innovation and data visualization, and that's why I invited him in. After the presentation, I grabbed him and said, geez, Kurt, any way you can get in the studio and share some of your knowledge with my listeners? My listeners are government IT professionals trying to figure this all out. And he said, why, sure. So Kurt, that's why you got you in the studio here, because you're smart, you know exactly what you're doing, and you can help my listeners maybe figure this all this crazy big data out and try and understand it. But before we dive into some of the skills you have, tell us about your background and how you wind up working for the ACYF.
Well, I have sort of a strange background, strange career path. In college, I was an art major, which is really unusual because now I do a lot of work with statistics, and you don't necessarily see an art major going into a career involving a lot of math and statistics, but that's where I started. And then I got very interested in counseling and psychology, and what became interesting is that there is an immediate connection between psychology and art, and where this is going is the power of data visualization, because there is a science behind that. So when I left college, I got a master's degree in art therapy, which, if you're not familiar with that, is basically a form of counseling where you throw in some art. And so you're working with a troubled kid and you say, hey, draw me a picture of why you're here today. And that child draws a picture of his family, and his dad is over here on the right. The mom is over here on the left, and the kid is somewhere in the middle. And so you use that art element to help open up a child's thoughts, help them think through the challenges that they're going through. And I did that in residential treatment, working with kids with emotional behavior problems from very troubled families, very troubled pasts, trying to help make sense of where they are in their life. You know, I did art therapy with families as well in that same environment.
You know, a troubled kid is not going to write a 500-word essay. A troubled kid is going to have a hard time expressing his emotions, but all of a sudden, visually, that communicates.
Right. Yeah. And that is ultimately what data visualization does as well. And so that's just one example of a way in which we can use art to open up ideas and to help communicate more effectively. I did that for a while, and I got very frustrated seeing all these children and families having gone through such horrible things, wondering where were the services when this child needed them. And so I got very interested in understanding these children, not from an individual point of view, but from a population point of view. And that led me to public health. So I got a master's in public health, and I studied diseases and challenges going on at a population level. And then I got frustrated there because I said, where are the policies? You know, this helps me understand how a problem can become widespread, but where are the policies and services, and how can we better deliver those? So then when I left that, I started to do research in child maltreatment, working with physicians at a children's hospital and a medical school, understanding better about how we can prevent child maltreatment. And then I got very interested in the policies and service delivery area that led me to a PhD in health services research. How does all this come back to art and data visualization? Somehow it did. Somehow that art major I had back in college and those long nights in the art studio never left me. And now they're back front and center. And now I use the power of art, the power of science and data, all in the context of policy and services and how we can help families and children across the country. And I've found a way to make sense of all of that and put it together. And that's eventually what led me here to Department of Health and Human Services and ACYF, whose mission is to help take care of very vulnerable children and families And I just happened to have landed in a great with a great group of people where there is the space to innovate and think creatively about our problems and to bring in these ideas of data visualization, open data, technology, and help move our space forward in a way that we've never done before.
Now, if you read about this character by the name of Leonardo da Vinci, he fancied himself to be a mechanical engineer and a military engineer. And, oh, yeah, I can artwork on the side, too. It's like, you know, just because you have one skill set does not exclude any other skill set. And I think your living proof of that is, you know, I have a daughter who's an engineer. That doesn't mean she can't do theater and acting. Well, it doesn't mean you're not limited in this. At least in the United States, you're not limited. So it's a
Absolutely.
Great story to tell.
And the new term, the new career that has become the exciting career of the decade is the data scientist. And this term is thrown out a lot. And that it is exactly what you just described. It is a person that comes with this strange but somehow related set of skills that might involve an art design sensibility, the ability to understand at least basic statistics and math, a bit of a hacker mentality, somebody that sees a system and wants to break it apart, figure out how to put it back together so it works better. That's the data scientist. And I think that is kind of the new career space for people coming out of graduate schools or even undergraduate schools who have been learning statistics. We have some new ways to apply those statistics in a very creative way. Our schools are just now catching up with how to teach them to come out with those skills. The private sector helps people develop those skills right away. But our traditional education system is still kind of old school. But that's starting to change. And I think as it changes, we'll have more people coming into the field, into government with that wide set of skills that can really bring a lot of innovation into what we're doing.
The past president of the National Speakers Association is a woman by the name of Patricia Fripp, based in San Francisco. And what she tells her speakers is, don't tell the story verbally, tell it visually. Because, you know, this is true for MBAs, for professional speakers. It's true for, you know, people advertising at the McDonald's. It's true for people trying to understand complex data sets. I mean, humans have this visual component, and you make it sound easy, but it's just not. it's difficult.
Yeah, it is tough. Public speaking is a challenge for a lot of people. So when you go to them and say, you know what, a great presentation is to have no words on your slides, just have pictures. Well, that's very anxiety provoking for a lot of public speakers or people that aren't used to public speaking. So there is a comfort issue that, exists in a lot of people. So it is a challenge, but I think it can be modeled and people can learn how to better present information. The TED Talks have become so popular, not just because it's really great content, because of how they're presenting that information. That is really what has changed how we now use PowerPoint or present to our boss or present to our team. It's the inspiration of how presentations are now being done in spaces like TED Talks that's really changing and allowing us to become better, more natural storytellers, because that is really what's going to matter in the end.
And from the radio perspective, it's a 20-minute talk. People know that 20 minutes, the audience seems to lose attention. You can almost graph. There's a visual you can graph it. At 20 minutes seems to be the map of them, and that's what the TED Talks are. Innovation, technology, and an art major. So this is going to be a very, very interesting discussion. What we're going to do is take a break here in a couple seconds and get back and talk about some of these applications. A lot of people in different agencies, we have people from DOD are listening, we have people from Interior listening, we have people from, from NASA listening, and they all have different challenges to understanding data and trying to make decisions from it. And I think maybe the next spot we'll talk about is, you start working at HHS, you're presented with a problem, and what tool set did you look at, and what tools did you choose to maybe give voice to some of these problems? You want to do that after the break?
Definitely.
Great, great, great. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, ACYF, at the HHS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, ACYF, at HHS. The first segment, we talked about Kurt's background and how we can use data and visualize it and help people make decisions based on that. So let me set the stage for you here. So you walk into HHS, got your credentials, first day in the job, you trying to find out where the cafeteria is or something. And what challenges were you presented with, and what were the options you looked at to solve some of these problems?
So the team that I worked with and still work with is a data analytics team. And our job is to support the commissioner, all of ACYF, in using the data we get from all over the country, from states' child welfare information systems, to better understand what's going on in the populations and lives of these children and families. We have massive amounts of data, millions and millions of records coming at us from every state, Puerto Rico, and D.C.
Lots of listeners are saying the exact same thing, same problem.
So this gets into that big data challenge, and we have big data in the sense that there is a lot of it. And so how can we best use that data so when a question comes from the commissioner or from a grantee or from a congressperson, how can we rapidly turn around an answer with all this data? The systems we have, some work, some do not work. And so the challenge is, how can we better improve upon what we have? One particular product we had that we gave to states every 6 months was something we called the data profile. And it was our effort to summarize all the major trends going on in that state, how they're performing on various child welfare outcomes. It was a 16-page Word document, 700 cells.
Soporific, huh? Okay, right. I would go to bed.
Right. Go to sleep now for the next 2 minutes as I describe this monolith. 700 cells of data, 25 footnotes, a very dense document. We would just email them. Wow. But it used their data and data from all over the country. It is not the way you typically want to deliver an effective story. So we said, this is a great opportunity for something we can probably improve on. How do we do that? And that's what got us into this exciting space about data visualization, something we were just hearing about, learning about, getting excited about. We had never done any of it. We'd played around with some neat graphs in Excel to try to make our data look pretty. We've done some work here and there, but we never truly invested in a very systematic way in a data visualization project. And we said, this is great for that. So we went first to the HHS Idea Lab, which for your listeners is such an incredible resource to feds, because this is a group that you can go to them and say, I have a problem. I have a challenge. Can you help?
And by the way, Damon Davis over there, he takes calls, he takes emails, he does communicate, and he talks to people all the time. So they're listening.
Yep. The Idea Lab is one of several relatively new services available to the government to help people innovate and break down barriers, work through the red tape, and get stuff done in a short amount of time. 18F is another great service. U.S. Digital Service is another great service. We went to the HHS Idea Lab, and we applied and said, here's our problem, here's our proposed solution, here's how much money we need, here's the kind of help we need. We were one of about 88 applicants, 13 were selected for a project, ours was one of them. And we worked with them and we learned some amazing stuff. Not only did they help us break down the barriers and get through the red tape, because this was a resource developed and founded by Secretary Sebelius. So this has incredible high-level institutional support. This is not some fringe group working kind of on the outside.
Stakeholder buy-in in my world.
Yes, they are deeply embedded in advancing government's mission and helping us work faster and smarter. So we worked with them closely, and they taught us things about agile methods. And we're like, what is agile methods? It sounds really cool. It sounds really neat. Agile is the new project management approach of our century. And it was often used and is often used in developing software products. But these days, people are applying agile methods to their family.
To marketing,
to pretty much everything. And the idea of agile is very different than the traditional way of managing a project, whether it's software or not. You think and work in a small team. You break an immense, complex project into small, discrete, functional pieces. You focus on each piece in what's called a sprint, where you work aggressively to get something done. So at the end of your sprint, whether that lasts 1 week or 3 weeks, the goal is to have something that is deliverable, something that's functional and you can use. We use some of those concepts of agile development in fixing this problem with this data profile. We also worked on iterative feedback with a team, a steering committee. So we got all the players together that will use this tool that we wanted to build and said, what do you need? Here's a picture of what we think you need. You tell us if we're right or wrong. And they said, you're right here, you're wrong here. I said, great, let's fix it, let's change it.
I hope everyone's listening. They didn't assume, hey, I've got a PhD, I know everything. No, they assumed the end user has the answers. They flipped it.
Absolutely. A core principle of agile thinking is you go first to the customer and never forget about them.
That's it.
You go back to them constantly. They are what's going to use your product. They are what's going to determine if it succeeds or fails.
They know so much more than you about what color they like and don't like and font. And so, hey, what do you like?
Yep. And if you engage them constantly throughout the process with constant feedback, constant iteration, you will keep them at the table. You will maintain and keep the momentum of your team because you're constantly getting feedback. And the idea of after the sprint, you have something that's functional and usable. You don't wait a year and say, look at what we've just been working on in our bunker. You get that out in front of people every week or every 2 weeks. So it's immediate feedback, very exciting way to work, much more effective way to work. So we took that and invested in Tableau, which is a data visualization software platform that's very popular, and said this is a great platform for us to use. We worked with the steering committee to convert this 16-page Word document into a visual dynamic interface. And again, we still had a lot of data going into that, but we kept it simple. We kept it strategic. We kept it agile. We could have developed a huge complicated data model with a huge data warehouse, but we didn't have the money and the time, nor did we have the interest, because we wanted to get something that's useful out to them very quickly. And in the end, it was an incredible success. We had a proof of concept, a prototype, a series of dashboards in Tableau. The people that used them loved them. One wrote a song about it. She was so excited. So we also had hard data too. We surveyed them before and after. So we had both the qualitative information, which a lot of the senior leadership might like, including the songs. We also had the hard data, the quantitative data that other leadership likes. And we were able to take all of that feedback and evaluation to them and say, this is a good idea. We've got a good proof of concept. We need to keep this going. Let's scale up. And so we are in the process of trying to scale that up on a much wider scale, not just a proof of concept, but something that is going to be functional and usable to all of our regional staff, our stakeholders, state people. We have a long way to go, but we have definitely made a lot of momentum. We've learned our lessons. We've had our successes. And so we're definitely moving forward. It's very exciting.
You know, when you told this story at the Tableau Government Summit, I was looking at you and looking at the audience, and I saw people from a wide range of agencies. They were nodding their heads. They were going, yes, yes, yes. And so this is where you can apply data analytics to your personal problem. And I'm going to use a quote I stole from a guy named Richard Spires. And the quote is, many agencies don't know what goodness looks like. Well, rewind the tape and listen to the last 5 minutes, and then you'll see what goodness looks like. And goodness looks like is it looks like listening, not assuming you're the smartest person in the room, even if you are, and adapting and being flexible with change. Because guess what? It's going to change, buddy. It's going to change. Maybe it's changing. Yes, I'm finishing this sentence. Change is inevitable. Let's take a little break here and maybe come back and talk about where my listeners can learn more about this, maybe some of the things that you read, some of the places you go to gain information, and talk about more of your success, and maybe we'll even talk about kittens if we have the time. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, ACYF, at the Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, Administration on Children, Youth, and Families at Health and Human Services. We've been talking about many different things, including trying to understand data and helping maybe people on your team understand data. And inevitably what happens is people come up to me and they go, well, Ed, Kurt was on the air. He's got a PhD. He's pretty smart. What does he read to keep up on technology? So I'm going to transfer the question to you, Kurt. So what do you read to keep up with these ideas and technology?
What really excites me lately is agile concepts. So I am trying to digest and consume as much as I can about agile methodology. One book I'm reading right now is called Scrum. Scrum is one of several ways to deliver and implement Agile principles. And The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time by Jeff Sutherland, who founded the idea of Scrum and really put Agile and Scrum into our lexicon.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Agile Manifesto for many years. Not the Communist Manifesto, the Agile Manifesto.
Sutherland
was
one of the drafters of that manifesto. I read a lot about that. But I also follow a lot of the news about artificial intelligence. That is where the future is.
I need me some of that because I don't have any native intelligence. I need some artificial stuff.
The work and advancements that are happening in the artificial intelligence space is going to transform everything, to how we order our milk, to how we analyze data, to the robot next to us that's helping us lift the luggage.
I saw a robot on TV last night that was walking in the woods.
Yes.
Independent power. It's a new one from Google. It is stunning. It's a transformation, and I want to talk about transformation and resources and maybe some TED Talks you got here. So you're optimistic. I mean, you're the only guy in this whole town who's optimistic about this whole approach. Tell me why you're optimistic and what you're optimistic about.
First, I don't think I'm the only one who's optimistic.
Oh, come on now.
Let's
do a survey.
I want to push back on that. I would say for a long time, I was not optimistic until I started to learn about what is happening in the federal space, because that is really transforming things. The federal government now has a philosophy and services that we have never had. And I'm thinking first of the U.S. Digital Service, which was launched only in 2014 after healthcare.gov had such trouble, where the Obama team and the administration said, we've got to fix this. So the U.S. Digital Service, that was one of their first projects, and they brought in some teams of people. A team of six people came to this project that was managed by about 55 companies. And they worked in an agile way to fix that in a matter of weeks. And then they built on top of that to improve it. And that momentum, that excitement of that success, bringing in this team, working in an agile way, is now starting to cascade and trickle down to all of us, where we haven't seen that or experienced it firsthand. People like me and our team, we're starting to. And so we've got the U.S. Digital Service, 18F, the Idea Lab. All of these are very recent new investments in the government space. So for those who are frustrated with the challenges and working creatively, trying to work fast and smart in a tough bureaucracy, I really do think things are changing quickly. And I've experienced it firsthand, and it's got me very excited and optimistic.
My producer is whispering in my ear, go to the TED Talk, go to the TED Talk, go to the TED Talk. Tell us about this TED Talk.
So one of the co-founders of the U.S. Digital Service, Haley Van Dyke, just had a recent TED Talk. It's not aired from what I understand, but there is a blog about her talk. But she spoke to the audience about basically the startup that's happening in government, the U.S. Digital Service, a startup concept. The idea
of reinforcing your optimism.
It is. It definitely is. And I think I've heard people say, you know, Agile sounds great. I'm sure it worked for that small team called Facebook back in the day when it was just two people working out of a garage. But do you really think Agile is going to work for a government with thousands and thousands and thousands of people? That's a big team. Well, the whole idea of Agile is you don't look at it that way. You look at those thousands and thousands of people and say, I need to break this down into small functional teams. And that is only when a complex project or an endeavor like turning the great ship that is the government a little bit this way or that way, that is the way to make it work, is you break it down into small teams, you give them the resources and the sprints and say, come back and deliver in 2 weeks. Your team over here, do the same thing. As more and more teams do that and experience that, that huge ship that is the government will start to turn in the right direction. That is how Agile will work. And I think that is what the U.S. Digital Service, 18F, and Idea Lab are promoting. I should say I don't work for them, so I hope I am, am truly reflecting their mission and intent. But from me, my perspective, somebody who's starting to see and receive some of the services, that's how I'm experiencing it. To me, that's a great thing.
I think everyone's read the Isaacson biography on Steve Jobs. And what you may not know is that this guy didn't always hit home runs. He failed a lot. And one of the concepts with Agile software development is, hey, Kurt's got this idea. Let him run with it. Oh, it failed. So what? He'll come up with three more and maybe two will be good.
Yeah.
So failure is not failure. How's this for a paradox? No, failure means that's one way that doesn't work.
Failure is so exciting because that's the moment you actually learn the most. Yeah. And in Agile concepts, the other thing is that when you fail, and we will all fail, you fail early. And you know right away that you failed and it's time to pivot, as opposed to the traditional approaches in our project management where you don't deliver until maybe a year later. If you fail then, you have spent a year of your time and money and other people's time. With Agile, you fail and succeed quickly and early on, so you know when and how to pivot. Very exciting.
I'm going to pivot to a strange topic, talk about kittens and the internet. So during your presentation, you told a little story about kittens and fonts, and maybe you can expand on that a little bit, and maybe someone can get an idea for designing their website who's listening to this.
So another thing I read about is sort of design principles, data visualization, you know, how to really create a compelling, useful data visualization. And so you learn tips along the way. And one of the best things I ever read in a blog was, every time you use the default font, a kitten dies. And the message there is that the default fonts that come out of the box and most of the programs we work with may not be what you should use. So Arial is common. Calibri is also is common. Those are actually okay, but the hue is not okay. And so a very simple tip in developing an effective visualization is you soften the hues. So don't use the default black hard text for all of your titles and all of your labels, because your audience will stare at those. You want them staring at the data. You want them staring at the bar graph, the colors on your map. You don't want them staring at the title. They need to see the title for about a second and then move on. If that title is a hard, aggressive black, their mind will keep going back to that. So little tips like that, just soften it. And that metaphor about the kitten, I think, really, really hits home to a lot of people. Lots of other data visualization principles that I am constantly trying to apply. I study and learn and steal from a lot. I look on the internet and you just do a Google search, dashboards, and you'll see the good and bad right away. Instinctively, you know what works and doesn't work. I get ideas like that a lot. Then I have some, you know, certain people in the field doing blogs that I really follow their work a lot.
You know, when I'm presented with large data sets and beat my head against the wall and call suicide hotline, can't figure it out, I think one principle I use is look at the most meaningful data first. And so this is an analytical skill, not necessarily a mathematical skill. So would you agree that, okay, look at the most meaningful stuff first and then maybe try to tell a story with that somehow to communicate that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have such massive amounts of data. If you try to analyze and visualize all of it, you're going to get nowhere. You're not going to have a story to tell. That's another art, another practice that we should cultivate, is being able to tell a story with our data. Right now, the movement in data visualization is to move away from these sort of static or interactive dashboards that just sort of sit on a blog, but finding better ways to integrate them into a story. In the journalism space, it's called data journalism. For us, it's called telling a better story with data. And so that is sort of a shift. And part of that is you find what is most critically important to your audience and you focus on that. The tough thing about many of us in the data field is that we like to be precise. We like to be a bit obsessive compulsive. We like to touch on every single data point. We somehow think all of it is critical. And so there's this, it's very difficult for us to edit and say what's most critical to put on that. It's a challenge that I think we constantly face, but you have to do that if you're going to make an effective story with your data.
Good. So this is a term called collaboration and data transparency, and these are all part of telling the story. Maybe we'll take a little break and talk about that. I think you have to empower people, what you're doing with the Agile process. I think you have to encourage collaboration, which is reinforcing Agile development as well, and then making your results accessible so people can either contribute or not contribute. But there's a lot of processes involved in Agile software development. Sounds ostensibly like an easy approach, but it's very, very, it's more difficult than the traditional waterfall approach, but the results are better too. It's like it's more difficult and it's worth it. That's from my perspective. Let's take a break, come back, talk more. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology Innovation, ACYF, at Health and Human Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology and Innovation, Administration on Children, Youth, and Families at HHS. We've had a wide-ranging discussion, talked about all kinds of concepts in the last few minutes, back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, we talked about events, and I go to events all the time, and I talk to people, and they always ask me questions, and they want to know, you know, oh, I heard this Kurt guy, yeah. What kind of phone does he have? And that's the important question. So what I've come up with is a scientific 10-question test that's going to find out if Kurt is a card-carrying nerd or not. It's mine. And by the way, Damon Davis took this test, too, so...
How did he do?
Failed miserably. Oh. He's no nerd.
So there is a grade at the end of
this. He claims to be. Oh, it's published. It's front page of the Washington Post tomorrow morning.
Can we end the interview now? I'm getting anxious.
Oh, this is really going to be difficult. Okay, number one. Do you have an Instagram account?
No, I do not.
How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
One. That's all I need.
Oh, come on. No, it should be like five. That's not a nerd. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
You're thinking fast, buddy. Have you ever used Meerkat, Periscope, or Blab? Anything like that?
I think Meerkats are adorable.
Thinking fast. You're sinking real fast here.
That's about all I know about Meerkats.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
Apple iOS.
What's the most popular app on that in the last 30 days?
Pocket, definitely my favorite.
Pocket,
curates
okay.
all your reading material, learns about what you want to read, creates your tailored newspaper. It's great for the commute.
So we break into your house. How many tablet devices do we find floating around there?
One.
You see, you're not much of a nerd. You got to work on your nerd quotient here.
I think a
Maybe
good
a pocket
nerd,
protector, white socks, something like that.
I think a
like
good
that.
Nerd finds the tools that work for him or her, and that's what they use.
Okay. What was your most recent post in social networking?
It was the Boston Dynamics Atlas, this humanoid robot. It was a video. This is a robot that Google developed. Google's now called Alphabet, apparently. And it was just the latest iteration of their robot.
I saw it too,
It's picking up heavy equipment. It's running out in the snow.
I saw it.
A guy tried to knock it down with a hockey stick and it got back up.
Intentionally,
getting a little scary, a little real. Yeah.
And when's your Apple Watch due? Is it next week or 2 weeks from now?
I'm going to wait for my neural implant instead. That to me is going to be more useful.
And the last book you read, was it in paper or was it electronic?
Two. I'm reading two simultaneously. One's an Audible book, Scrum. I mentioned that earlier. The other is a paper book, The Pentagon's Brain, An Uncensored History of DARPA. Very exciting stuff.
DARPA's good. You've been in a lot of different places and seen all kinds of different things, and you're pretty optimistic here. So where do you see agile software development, agile project development, and the federal government in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, it's difficult to deploy. It's hard. You really have to have a specialist or someone who's done it somewhere before and knows the quicksand. And it's tough, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be adapted. Where do you see it happening in the next 5 years?
Right. I do see concepts like agile thinking, startup concepts, you know, project management and management philosophy that's working very well in the startup community and the private sector. That is starting to come into the government. And I think right now it's in various places, I think that will start to become more commonplace. And that is really, I think, what's going to be able to move us forward, is to learn how to think differently when managing large contracts, complex projects. So I think we're going to see more agile thinking and newer progressive management, project management styles. I think we'll definitely see some more open data. You know, data.gov and other platforms are there. I think we'll start to see people make more aggressive use of them, help get our data out there and more transparent. We're going to start to see that. We'll obviously see more data visualization as new technology arrives and as people learn how to implement that and get trained up on that. We're going to see more of that. And I think we'll see more storytelling with the data. I also get very excited about the real frontiers of technology. The virtual reality is the platform that people at Facebook and Google and Microsoft think is going to change how we live, work, and play. I don't think tomorrow, though, feds are going to be showing up to work with their virtual headsets on their heads. That's a long way out. But that exciting technology and what's happening there, the connection to us is more immersive experiences with the data. So I do think in the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to start to see data visualization go from this interactive dashboard you can click on the website to something that's more immersive. And some people are doing this already, even with virtual reality, taking a 3D data chart and putting it in this virtual environment where you can walk up and you touch the plane and the view and you can see the plane's maintenance history and where it's going to land. And then you look over to your left and there's another plane and you're looking at real live data on real planes. We're going to start to see that down the road in very exciting ways, how we can be more immersed with the data and using more of our senses rather than just sight. We use sound. People are starting to apply music to data visualization to really advance the message. It's a completely different experience. So I think multimedia, more sensory input from how we use data is what we're going to see, you know, sort of 5, 10 years out.
In fact, I do a podcast for aerospace engineers, and I'm familiar with a lot of technology they're using there. You know, when you get on the phone and talk to an aerospace engineer, they talk about transparency and ease of use and serving customers. I talked to an engineer yesterday, and he said, I want on my website, I want my customers to come in and find out what stage the test is at.
Right.
And I said to myself, this is transparency, and this is communication, and this is getting everyone involved. It is agile principles being applied right there?
Yes. And this is a challenge. This is where I'm torn. I get very excited about these new ideas, these new technologies, but I always have to remind myself, we still need to create things that are useful. And one of the principles of a good visualization is that it's easy to use, it looks nice, it's fast, easy to make, but it's got to be useful. So we have to pause when we get very excited about this. That is a beautiful, beautiful visualization, because there's a lot out there. That is a beautiful, cool use of technology, because there's a lot out there. But is it useful? Does it help you make a decision better? That is something we have to constantly keep in mind. And that's what the customers will remind you every week when you sit down with them and say, this is what I've got so far.
I think that's the issue when we talk about open source software, open data. Oh, geez, we got all this open data. We should use it. Whoa. Just because it's open doesn't mean it's good. I mean, it's not like free beer. Free beer is pretty good, but free data, you can be inundated with that and spin your wheels forever. And so, you know, I think you have to take this open data concept with a little bit of restraint and prudence and go, okay, you get a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's take a look where we can use this open data.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work going on in the child welfare space on promoting data exchanges, helping a child welfare agency connect their data to the data in the school system, to the data at the hospital, to the data at the Medicaid area, because that child and family is probably going through all of those systems. The data at the court in the juvenile justice department, because that child and family has probably been in every one of those systems. So there's a lot of work being done in trying to open data in these siloed systems in a way that child welfare caseworkers can connect to it and have a much more informed picture of what the family and child is going through. Very tough to do, but there's a lot of momentum in there right now. Healthcare has been at it for about 20 years, trying to create health information exchanges, but some hospitals have trouble connecting the data on the first floor to the data on the second floor. And now we're trying to move across hospitals and across regions, across states. Very tough to do, but that's where a lot of the open data work is going on.
Understand. You know, when it comes to changes, people have different tool sets and toolboxes they pull tools from. And when you look at data visualization, you could pull up a tool like Tableau, or you could pull up a tool like Burst. You could use standard tools that are built into Microsoft applications, SAS, IBM, Oracle, Cognos, I mean, there's a whole long list. And which ones did you look at, and why'd you pull out Tableau out of the toolbox?
So we looked at a lot. We looked at IBM Cognos. It's definitely a big player in the field. We looked at ClickView, which is sort of a competitor of Tableau. We looked at Tableau, obviously. We looked at a lot of different ones. The ones that really rose and met our needs, which was, again, our needs. It may not be the needs of anyone else listening, but it met our team's needs, and that's what was important, was Tableau. We thought that was going to be easy to produce some visualizations, easy to deliver and execute in a short amount of time, because that's what we had. And for that particular project I talked about earlier, it was a proof of concept. So we were able to purchase just a couple licenses of something that allowed us to get going and at least get our feet wet. You can accelerate and ramp up and scale up with, you know, larger versions of Tableau and different implementations, and that's something we're looking at. But that worked for us.
In the commercial world, I was working on a large project last year where they tried to pipe in data to from three different sources. It was Amazon Redshift, Salesforce, and Oracle. And they tried to, you know, put all three together and then get a little report based on that. And they tried everything, and they stumbled on Tableau. It seems to have an API that is not perfect, but flexible enough to take different pipes, different types of garden hoses, and come up with a nice sprinkler. So that's the, I think that's one strength there, that that's not very well publicized, because it does have that flexible API where you can take those different data sets and bring them in.
Yeah, you can publish a dashboard to Tableau Public or on your Tableau server, and then link to that dashboard and embed it in your blog or website. But I also want to encourage people to use the tools that might already be in front of them in Excel. I had somebody from Human Resources come to me, somebody who I never thought would have a need or an interest in data visualization. I did it, had done a quick presentation. She saw it and she said, Kurt, I have this horrible spreadsheet. It's got about 50 columns. It shows me the people that we're trying to hire and how long it's taken to hire them and the different sort of dates and milestones. I'd like a visual. And I said, let's do this in Excel. Let's not try to buy some product outside of our line. Let's just do this now just to get the experience of how you can visualize data that she has lived with in a spreadsheet for years. So you can start with what you have now and make a lot of gains.
Great advice as we end the show. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest, Kurt Heisler, Senior Policy Advisor for Technology Innovation, Administration on Children, Youth, and Families at HHS. Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.